was about 10 years old, my dad had an early morning live radio program on Sunday mornings on station KFNB in Faraday, Louisiana, about 6 miles from where I grew up on the Tensaw River. And one Sunday morning while he was on the air, a man came to the large glass window there on the studio and began tapping the window. And my dad glanced over and then began to try to ignore him since he was live on the air. But the guy just kept on insistently getting louder and louder, knocking on that window. And finally, unable to ignore him, he told the audience that there's somebody that is insistent on seeing me, and so I'll be right back. But when he opened the door, the man told him that there were dogs killing our sheep that morning. And so he cut his lesson short. I don't have sheep, so you don't have that option there this morning. And he rushed home and got his rifle and proceeded to kill 17 dogs that were killing sheep that morning. It was a sad scene that afternoon as we burned the carcasses of 17 dogs in a large pile of sheep that they had killed. Dogs don't normally kill sheep because they're hungry. They kill sheep because the sheep are afraid when the dog appears, and they start running and blading and making lots of noise, and that excites the dogs and it stimulates this predatory nature that the dog has. And quite often, dogs that would not tend to do that will become enthralled with it if they're there on the scene, and they'll join in the chase. When they catch them, they kill them. They don't eat them. They just kill them. And once they've done that, made sure that that sheep is dead, then they go after another one, and they haul it down and kill it. And once a dog begins this behavior, it is almost impossible to stop that dog from doing it again. And so even dogs that you may have caught from that quite often may have to be euthanized. They will climb a fence, they'll dig under, they'll do anything to get back to that action again. Flip that coin over from the sheep standpoint. When the dogs come, they have no defense whatsoever. They're just basically helpless prey until the shepherd comes along with a rifle and does something about it in modern times. In Matthew chapter 10, verse 16, Jesus told his disciples that he was sending them out like sheep among wolves. And I ask that this picture be put up this morning so that you can have that picture in your mind as we look at this lesson, continue this lesson that we began last Sunday. We noted some life lessons from Matthew chapter 10, verse 1 through 16 of how to conduct ourselves in a world of wolves. And as I go back and analyze those life lessons that we talk about, it appears to me that Jesus taught some really essential principles which, in fact, characterize our everyday life. In other words, we live our life the same way every day, regardless of how other people respond and regardless of the outcome. Our lives are controlled neither by flattery nor by rejection or threats. And you listen to those life principles that we talked about last week and see if you don't agree that these are things that we're to be doing and that are to characterize our lives every day as Christians. Number one, you need to know that Jesus doesn't intend everyone, even in the church, to look like you. And so don't be surprised when you look around you in the church and there are people whose philosophy of life is considerably different than your own. And number two, don't change the message. It's really easy whenever pressure comes to bear in some form or other on our life that we quit preaching repentance. That's the message. It's the only message that brings hope to a lost world. And we start preaching some message other than that about how to have a good life here on this earth. And number three, live every day by faith, realizing that if God doesn't come through for us, then we're going to fail miserably in our life. And then number five, associate with people who are receptive to spiritual things. And be strong enough whenever you find yourself in a situation being attracted to some person who is totally unspiritual, be strong enough to get away from such a person. Don't befriend people like that because it influences your life. And number six, understand your relationship to the world and always keep it clear in your mind. You are sheep they are wolves. Don't lose sight of that. And in this hostile environment, number seven, we do not adopt their methods. We don't fight fire with fire. We are perceptive as serpents, but at the same time, we're as harmless as doves. And that's how Jesus intends for us to live in this world. Remember when Paul was en route to Jerusalem, he met with the elders from the church at Ephesus in Acts chapter 20, beginning in verse 17. He was there and he was on a ship and the ship docked and he sent messengers to tell the elders and their families that he would like to meet with them, and they came down to the coast to meet with him, and there we have the dialogue that took place, or at least characterization of what was said. Listen to part of what he says to them beginning in verse 22 of Acts chapter 20. And now, compelled by the Spirit, I'm going to Jerusalem, not knowing what will happen to me there. Only know that in every city the Holy Spirit warns me that prison and hardships face me. But I take note of none of these things, or I hold these things to be of no account. I consider my life worth nothing to me, if only I may finish the race and complete the task the Lord has given me, the task of testifying to the gospel of God's grace. That phrase, and by the way, interestingly, it's not in your 1984 NIV version, but it's in the original text, and I don't know how many texts, the older text it was in, and how many it wasn't in, that caused them to omit it. But that phrase, King James term, says, but none of these things move me. He said, I don't know exactly what awaits me there in Jerusalem, but I've been warned repeatedly. Every city that I stop in, there's a message for me. You're going to be in prison. You're going to have hardship. Jerusalem. He says, but I don't let any of these things move me. Or literally, I don't even take this into account. And I have to tell you, when I think about that and that situation, that kind of puts a chill up my spine. That he knew that hardship and very likely, consequently, from going to Jerusalem there, he was going to be arrested, stand trial, go to Rome, end up dying. And he was certainly persecuted all along the way. And he says, but none of these things move me. I don't even take these things into account when I'm make my decision. And I think, you know what? That's the way I want to be. Even if I know that there's going to be serious consequences in my life to preaching the truth, I want to preach it anyway and not even take those things into account. And just say, if that's the cost that we pay for being faithful to God, that's the cost that is to be paid. And I think that he becomes my hero when I think about that. I talked to my mom this past Thursday, and she informed me that she has received a preliminary diagnosis regarding a physical ailment that she has had for some relatively short period of time that may involve a very serious problem. And we talked about that a few minutes, and she said, well, Ken, if it is, I want you to know it's okay. I'm not afraid. The ultimate life challenge is to live your life with such clarity, such focus, such security, that you can say, it doesn't matter what's going on around me. It doesn't matter what I'm called on to endure. I know exactly what I am to say, and I know exactly what I'm to do, and nothing can ever change that. In Psalm 16:8, I have set the Lord always before my face. Because the Lord is at my right hand, I shall not be moved. Wouldn't be a bad mantra, would it? That wouldn't be a bad thing for us to write down so that we can see it every day. Psalm 16:8. I've set the Lord always before my face. And because the Lord is at my right hand, I shall not be moved. Let's continue in our context of Matthew chapter 10, beginning in verse 24, and see what should we expect when we live as sheep among wolves. What do we need to prepare our hearts and our minds and our lives to face when we go out like sheep among wolves? Beginning in verse 24, and let me get there, you're already all there. A student is not above his teacher, nor a servant above his master. It is enough for the student to be like his teacher and the servant to be like his master. If the Lord of the house has been called Beelzebul, how much more the members of his house? Now there's something of a play on words here that Jesus is doing. He says, if they call the Lord of the house the Lord of dung, that's what the word means. A derogatory term that they, when they referred to Jesus, they called him Beelzebul, the Lord of dung. He said, and if they call the Lord of the house, the Lord of dung, what do you think they're going to call you? You who followed me. How much more those of his household? How much does it bother you? How much does it matter to you to be ridiculed because of your Christian conviction? And you know, I think of young people when I think about this. But my mind shouldn't go to them any more than it goes to me and to you. How much does it matter to you that people criticize you for what you believe, for being a Christian or for holding a particular truth doctrine in your life? And you know, your answer depends on who is important in your life. How much does it matter if somebody criticizes you? How much does that bother you? Well, that depends on how important those people are, or that person is who's doing the criticizing. Whose approval do you want the most in your life? And you know what? You really do need to settle that in your mind. You really do need to settle in your mind who is important to me in my life. And is this person who's criticizing my Christian beliefs, are they important enough that I'm willing to lose my soul over them? And that them thinking well of me, or them being able to change my mind, that's important enough to me that I'm willing to change what I think and how I live in my life. You remember Jesus' conclusion to the Sermon on the Mount, Matthew chapter 7? Blessed are you when people insult you, persecute you, and falsely say all kind of evil against you because of me. Rejoice and be glad, because great is your reward in heaven. For in the same way they persecuted the prophets who were before you. Matthew chapter 7, 11 through 12. Point. A sheep living among wolves will never fit in. He will be ridiculed. Don't let that move you. Secondly, when you live as wolves among, or excuse me, as sheep among wolves, verse 26 through 31, don't be afraid of them. So do not be afraid of them. Notice he's going to say that three times in this context. There is nothing concealed that will not be disclosed, or hidden that will not be made known. What I tell you in the dark, speak in the daylight. What is whispered in your ear, proclaim from the roots. Do not be afraid of those who kill the body but cannot kill the soul. Rather, be afraid of the one who can destroy both soul and body in hell. Are not two sparrows sold for a penny? Yet not one of them will fall to the ground apart from the will of your Father. And even the very hairs of your head are numbered. So don't be afraid. You are worth more than many sparrows. Jesus gives us, now, to say, I mean, look at the picture. If I'm a sheep among wolves, he says, don't be afraid. Three times, don't be afraid. And by the way, God is really serious about this fear thing, because he knows what fear does to us. Fear causes us to compromise. Fear causes us to make really poor decisions. Fear causes us to leave the path that we've determined that we're going to walk in our life. Fear causes us to reverse ourselves, doesn't it? And so it's really important that we not be afraid. And this has been a consistent theme throughout the Bible, Old and New Testament. You remember when he called Jeremiah to prophesy about the terrible calamity that was going to come on Jerusalem and Judah. He said to him, get yourself ready. Stand up and say to them, whatever I command you, do not be terrified of them, or I will terrify you before them. And so he gives us three reasons. I mean, to say to a sheep surrounded by a snarling wolf, don't be afraid, is one thing. But to accomplish that, how in the world can a sheep accomplish not being afraid in the face of wolves? Well, he gives you three reasons here in this context to not be afraid. And they're really practical, folks. We need to put this into our lives and into our thinking process. First of all, in verse 26 and 27, don't be afraid, because a day will come when they will be exposed and you will be vindicated. You remember the story that Jesus told about the rich man and Lazarus in Luke chapter 16? There was a rich man who was dressed in purple and fine linen and lived in luxury every day. At his gate was laid a beggar named Lazarus, covered with sores and longing to eat what fell from the rich man's table. Even the dogs came and licked his sores. The time came when the beggar died, and the angels carried him to Abraham's side. The rich man also died and was buried in hell, where he was in torment. He lifted up his eyes and he saw Abraham far away and Lazarus by his side. So he called to him, Father Abraham, have pity on me and send Lazarus to dip the tip of his finger in water and cool my tongue, because I'm in agony in this fire. But Abraham replied, Son, remember that in your lifetime you received good things while Lazarus received bad things. But now he's comforted here and you're in agony. And besides all this, between us and you, a great chasm has been fixed, so that those who want to go from here to you cannot, nor can anyone cross over from there to us. You remember the impact of the story. The roles were reversed. The day came, because the Lord was certainly aware of everything that was going on this earth. The day came where the beggar was vindicated and the rich man was judged. Peter says, the Lord knows how to rescue godly men from trials and to hold the unrighteous for the day of judgment. 2 Peter chapter 2, verse 9. And so don't be afraid, because everything is going to turn out okay if you're righteous. The wicked will be punished. You will be vindicated. Remember that when you're surrounded by the wolves. Secondly, in verse 28, don't be afraid, he said, because their power is limited. He said, don't be afraid of somebody that can only kill the body. Because once they've done that, that's a worst case scenario. That's the very, very worst thing that they can do to you. Fear him who can destroy both the body and the soul in torment, he said. You have a choice. Decide who you want as your enemy. And you do that by deciding who you want as your friend. It occurs to me that we tend to focus on what can I do to make people like me. That tends to be one of the things that is a constant part of our life, right? What can I do? What can I say? How can I act to make people like me? And we need to realize that when we choose certain friends, we automatically make certain people as enemies. Remember, we're sheep. The world is filled with wolves. And Jesus says, if you make friends with the wolves, then you become my enemy. You cannot be friends with the world and with God. And then thirdly, verse 29 through 31, don't be afraid because of the value that God places on you. Janice and I were recently walking, and we saw a dead sparrow out in the bushes beside the trail, and I bent down and picked it up, and it hadn't gotten really stiff, so it hadn't been dead very long, and I was holding it and looking at it, and she said, God knew the moment that his heart quit beating, didn't it? Nobody else did. Nothing escaped the notice of him with whom we have to do. And in a similar context, Luke chapter 12, verse 6, it says, Jesus said, are not five sparrows sold for two pennies, and yet not one of them is forgotten by God. Somewhere I read that the going price at this time was two sparrows for a penny, or literally the smallest copper coin, which was called an Asseria, A-S-S-I-R-I-A, Asseria. And if you wanted to bargain, and people did it even back then, then you could get five for two pennies, and that constituted a special bargain. So they weren't very valuable. Job says in 28 verse 4, for he looks to the ends of the earth and sees everything under the heaven. Every single minutia. He knows how many fish there are in the sea. He knows how many hares. Not only does he know how many, but he knows, has assigned a number to every hair on your head. Incredible what he knows. And the point is that not one thing that anybody ever does or says or thinks about you escapes God's notice. He knows. And so when somebody insults, he knows. And not only does he know, but he cares. And so remember, there's three reasons for you not to be afraid. Because one day the wolves will be exposed. And I'll be vindicated. 2 Timothy chapter 2, verse 19, Paul warns Timothy that some false teachers will be extremely successful in recruiting Christians. And knowing how discouraging that was going to be, he says, nevertheless, the foundation of God stands sure. Having this seal, the Lord knows those who are his. Be sure. That's the seal that he puts on. Regardless of what happened, the Lord knows those who are his. And then secondly, I will not be afraid because their power is limited. They can't touch my real treasure. This body is going to die, regardless if somebody kills it or if it dies from old age. This body is going to die. We need to accept that. But their power is limited. Psalm 56:11, in God have I put my trust. I will not be afraid of what man can do unto me. And then thirdly, I will not be afraid because I am the most valuable thing in this world to God, and he's watching me. He's watching over me. Jesus, well, does that mean anything to you? You know the context it does. It means that he cares about what happens to you in your life. He's standing before Lazarus' tomb. He knows that in just a moment he's going to say the words and Lazarus is going to be alive and walk out. But he took the time because he saw the pain in the heart of those friends and family that were standing around. He saw them weeping and he knew the anguish and the pain that they felt in their heart. And he took the time. Right. That means something to us, Christian. He knows and he cares. Your heartache touches his heart. Tonight, we're going to, Lord willing, continue in this same context, looking at what to expect when you live among wolves. So I hope that you'll make your plans to be here. But I wanted to leave you with the thought about not being afraid this morning, because because I think that's a really difficult challenge. Do not be afraid of them. Now, that's going to take some doing in your life. You're going to have to know some things when you're the sheep surrounded by the snarling wolf. You're going to have to know something in order to truly not be afraid. And if you do not learn these lessons and start putting them into practice in your life now, then you're going to have serious difficulty in your life. Whenever difficulties come, you'll be unprepared. You'll be afraid. And you'll allow your desire to have friends in this world or your fear to control the decisions that you make at that time. You'll make the wrong decision and you'll lose your soul trying to save your life. Trust me on this. That's a bad trade. This life is short. Eternity is long. Living among wolves, there are things that you must know and understand and practice. Stay really, really close to the shepherd. He's the only defense.